Yeah, well, I'm Scott Cuthbert, CEO and co-founder of Safepedia.
And I'm Gabe Encarnacion. I'm the vice president of BDL Safety.
And it's my extreme pleasure today. I'm super excited about today's episode to introduce Colleen Madsen to the world of safety. Colleen has been a mentor, coach, trainer of mine for many, many years. The backstory is that I was part of a startup, and I was supposed to be on the operations side, and I found myself responsible for sales one day. And although I'm comfortable, you know, talking to people and calling and whatnot, I didn't realize that sales was a profession. And that there was a system, a method to the madness. And so it was kind of like, you know, that moment in the Matrix where Morpheus says, you know, to Neo, do you want to take the blue pill and wake up in bed, or do you want to take the red pill and see how the world really works? And so Colleen's kind of training and coaching helped me realize again, like, there's a system to this, and that there's a bit of a game to sales as well. And so I was really excited to bring her and her expertise to safety, because often as safety people, we're selling programs, you know, we're selling kind of sell technology or sell ideas to an organization. And I think it's important to recognize that, like I say, there's a system that can be followed. There's a psychology that we can understand, and the key takeaway from, well, one of the key takeaways for me was that everybody buys for their own reason. So I think if you just rush in thinking that you know all the benefits and all the features, and that'll be enough to get your organization to sign the PO is probably the wrong approach. So without going on too much more, gushing much more, I'll let Colleen do a quick intro so that she can provide her background, and then we'll get into the questions.
Oh, sounds good. Thank you, Scott, and thanks, Gabe. I've actually had a quite a remarkable career and been really fortunate. I have spent the last 30 years as a trainer, coach, strategist in a number of industries. But I found myself always focusing on the revenue side, and I found myself being invited into companies to kind of tear apart and rebuild their customer facing part of their business. And so I bought and developed and sold a training company, and have held just a myriad of different interim positions with a bunch of companies to help them think about how to go to market differently. And as the world gets more cluttered and more busy, being able to create some sort of sustainable competitive advantage is challenging. And so I have just had the good fortune of working with this country's brightest and best for many, many years. I just love the experience so far. So from a sales perspective, that is the heartbeat of what I do. I love salespeople. I think in your world in particular, when I think about the specialists out there selling safety, they're like the road warriors, and it's so busy out there that everybody's trying to find that way, that one thing that we can do to make ourselves different. And so my role has always been to see if I can help people accomplish that.
That's pretty awesome. Colleen, I'm going to go back to a line that you just said, where you said you love sales and you love salespeople. It reminds me of a conversation I had with Scott a while back, where someone challenged me a while back, and they asked me, so do you like salespeople? And I'm more of an operations guy. My background's in finance and economics. And the question kind of caught me off guard. And because my initial reaction was, no, I don't like salespeople. I don't like being sold to and all this stuff. And then I stopped and thought about it. And I actually called up Scott at one point, because I was thinking, well, a lot of my good friends are salespeople. A lot of my good colleagues that I spent time with, Scott included, are salespeople. And so what is up with that visceral kind of knee-jerk reaction to say that I don't like salespeople and sales? And then realizing, wow, there's so much that goes into selling. that is so much more personal, but there's also a process and a science behind it. And I'm slowly moving to that side of understanding the importance of sales and even being able to, you know, quietly, when no one else is listening, say that I actually do like salespeople. So don't let that out too much.
It's funny, you're not alone with that. I mean, if you just take a look at business cards of people who are in sales, they won't even put it on their cards. Right. Nobody puts salesperson. They put account executive, territory manager. They'll use any word but that. And rightly so, because then the world, there are a lot of really bad salespeople out there, and we have to deal with them on a daily basis, personally, professionally. So you're not alone with that whole idea.
Oh, thank goodness.
Not enjoying. But you know, at the end of the day, we are all selling something. We are all trying to compel somebody to either think a certain way, do a certain thing, purchase something. I mean, even the pastor in my church is selling. He's trying to get butts in the seat, right? And right. So we are all selling something. We just don't like the word.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think that was one of the one of the things for me was, again, I wasn't in an official sales capacity, and I was moved into the official sales capacity, and like Gabe said, and we're talking about, you kind of have this visceral sort of used car salesman or salesperson reaction to sales. And I think Colleen, you helped me realize that it's a profession and there's a system, and that you were really clear that it doesn't matter what system you follow, you need to follow a system. And so, you know, I was hoping today, again, We're hopefully talking to mostly safety people, not necessarily salespeople, and you know, hoping that they can leave today with some key takeaways as to how they could, again, like you said, everybody's sort of selling something, you know, how they can sell their safety program to employees, how they can sell those safety programs to, you know, senior management, and what kind of approach or system, you know, could they follow or look into to kind of understand. Again, the matrix moment for me was like you almost have to step outside yourself and follow the process. And when you start to do that, it's like, it is like the matrix. Like you're like, oh, I am mirroring the person and they are mirroring me, right? Or I'm asking questions and they're giving me the answers that I'm already wanting, you know, from them, you know, in a way, or I'm taking them through the small yeses. So maybe we can dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, even for the sales professionals that you have, the specialists that are in your clients' companies, they are in fact on a daily basis compelling people to act in certain ways, do certain things, fill in certain reports. So there's a transaction happening. It's just not as obvious, but it's still happening. And some of the best advice that I've given people, particularly in that arena, is to actually learn how to sell, because it really matters. And the thing that really separates, and you mentioned it, Scott, the thing that really separates sort of this massive mediocrity from those who excel to a degree that many don't, is that they have a systematic and sort of deliberate approach to business development, to creating some sort of a conversation that can lead someone to the place they want them to be. And the problem for most salespeople is that, and we'll talk about salespeople and bridge it to the people that you're referring to, but it is impossible to improve on something that is not understood. So it's kind of like the game of golf. An average golfer will never ever become better than average, no matter how many balls they hit off the driving range. So, you know, an average golfer, they're out there sort of winging it because they have a natural swing, right? Or they're a natural athlete. And so they go out and they hit the ball and it goes to the right and it goes to the right and it goes to the right and it goes to the right. So the average golfer, unaware that there's a structure happening while he's swinging the club. There are a series of steps that are being taken. Unaware of that, they don't know how to fix it, so they just start aiming left. And we call that in sales a systematic adjustment. So we're not actually a symptomatic. We're not actually fixing the problem. And then the challenge with that is when you do finally connect all the dots, your ball goes like a lightning bolt into the bushes on the left, right? So sales is just about communication. And this is where the bridge from sales to leadership, it's all the same. There's a series of steps or structure. And so as leaders and as salespeople, our job is to build and rely on a structure and allow our customers, our prospects, and our staff to provide the content. But if you don't know the structure, what happens is we end up providing all the content thinking that's going to do the job, right? So in golf, for example, there's these steps that happen. They're the same steps that are taught to every golfer on the planet, every PGA professional: grip, aim, stance, posture, backswing, impact point, and follow through. When you know these things and when you're taught that structure, when something starts to go wrong, you can actually determine where in the process the mistake was made. So that's why systems are so powerful in structure. And then strategies are all the things, little nuances that happen within the structure. So like how you grip your club can move the ball to the right, to the left, up or down, but it actually doesn't change the mechanics of the swing. So if you're to watch the golfers, the PGA golfers, they are all taught the exact science. They're exactly the same because there is no other science to the physics to this, but yet they still look different. And then sort of surrounding the system is like this ecosystem that is commonly called bonding and rapport. But it is like what's happening around you while you're doing this. It's the course layout. It's how far your competitor hit the ball. It's the weather. It's all of those things. But when you have a structure that you can rely on, you don't have to adjust what you're doing because of the circumstances that are around you. And that's how those people become so good at it, because they're so deliberate, right? So to me, that's the value of systems. And you know, there's a ton of them out there from a sales and communication perspective. And it doesn't matter what words people use. It doesn't matter what images they use. They're all talking about exactly the same things. You know, opening up a call with purpose. It's the same as opening up a meeting with purpose, right? Really understanding what rapport is. Knowing what people are really looking for, like the questions we're being asked, are we really answering the real question, whether it's from a customer or a staff member, right? How do you diagnose what's working? And every book tells us from a sales perspective to talk about decision making, talk about budget, making sure that we have some clarity at the end. These are the same rules and principles that apply to business just as leaders. So whether it's spin selling, the wedge, Gittimore, Brian Tracy, Sandler, you can name them all. It's not so much which system, but rather, will you use any system? Will you practice so deliberately that you can become great at something, but you can't deliberately practice something you don't know. Like there is no evidence that high performance comes without deliberate practice. That's where this 10-year rule came into effect, right? Mastery is received at 10,000 hours. And it's not just practice, it's deliberate practice that makes the difference. But you can't be deliberate if you don't know what you're doing, right? So the first step in high performance is understanding your swing, like what's actually going on, right?
I think that's so fascinating too, looking at it from the safety professional's perspective, that usually you have a safety manager that comes into an environment where maybe they're not as welcomed over yeah. there. You know, you have a group of people that are, let's say they're carpenters or they're welders. They've been doing this job for X number of years, and how dare you tell me how to do this job? And the safety manager is now butting up against someone, maybe a group of people who don't understand what they're trying to do. And if you don't, as you said, if you don't have a system, you don't know how to go and even approach the people that you are working with. You can't translate the language of safety to the language of the work that's being done and vice versa. And if the sale is having people take your safety protocols and the standards and apply their work to that and vice versa, if you can't get the mechanics right, and I love that golf analogy, by the way, if you can't get those different parts of the mechanics right and you're not practicing it, I mean, as you said, the message is going to go all over the place. There's no way you're going to get any sort of adoption from the workers in your workplace.
Exactly. And I think one of the first thoughts that we need to be thinking about when we are in sales or whenever we're trying to convince someone to consider something else, to think a different way, is that the very first thing we need to do is understand someone's ability and their willingness to change. So, for example, there's one thing that every salesperson, I call it the elephant in the room. So, you know, imagine a sales guy goes into a prospect's office and he sees this elephant sitting in the corner of a room, an actual elephant, and he's been there a long time. Like he can't even get out. He's been there so long. And so the sales guy will look at the elephant and he'll look back at the customer and he might take one more look, but he'll choose to ignore that that's happening. And so when I share this analogy with people, I ask them, do you know what this elephant is that I'm talking about? And I get a bunch of different answers. You know, the one thing that we can count on for sure, the absolute certainty, whether we're in sales or we're trying to convince somebody to do something different. But when it comes to sales, the one thing that we know for sure when we meet someone for the first time is that this customer is not ours. And that's actually the only meaningful thing that we need to know. So the number one competitor for salespeople, for business leaders, for ops managers is what people have been doing by habit, status quo. That's what matters. So people don't need us, no matter how many need-based questions we ask. And in fact, if any of us went out of business tomorrow, there's not a lot of people who would really care in the big scheme of things. It's kind of humbling, but they don't really care. They would move on. Like if your mechanic dies, you don't stop fixing your car, right? But if we know that the real competitor to our getting this idea across is the status quo, like, why don't we talk about like, so the first sale has to be if someone is willing and able to change, to even consider change. Right. And so if someone is unable and unwilling to consider change, it doesn't matter what you say after. It doesn't matter what your dog and pony show looks like. It doesn't matter whether you serve pizza or not. It's not going to matter. So the first conversation is got to always be about someone's willingness to change. So I often tell my clients, we have to sell this concept first. But we don't do that. So we go in to these conversations and we look and we sound and we appear and we are identical to the last person that came in, except the company name is different. So from a buyer's perspective, when everything looks the same, when everything feels identical, and it does today, and it's frightening, it's alarmingly similar, the only thing that people can do is rely on something that they can concretely grab onto. And in the world of sales, it's from a buyer's perspective, it becomes price. That's the one thing that they can rationalize. It's the same with leadership. The first thing that we have to sell is someone's willingness to even consider change, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, one of the key takeaways that I learned working with you Colleen, was the push and the pull. And so I think that, you know, as safety professionals, we know that there's legislation we need to follow. There's standards we need to follow. There's best practices, and we need to do all this to keep people safe, right? There's like the benefit of doing them and the result of doing them properly. But oftentimes we're pushing, trying to push these things forward. And the push pull for me was used in my role and in sales and also in my personal life, because it's when you're dealing with teenage kids, you can't push them to do anything. But as soon as you say, oh, fine, don't do it, then, you know, they swing back. So that push and pull pendulum that you shared with us. And when I took the training was, you know, if you push somebody, the pendulum's going up and the resistance is to come back. But as soon as you let them go, you know, then they'll swing back in the direction that you're hoping they fall into. Right. So if
exactly.
Maybe we could talk about some examples, or, you know, we'll
sure.
script yeah. a little bit, but you know, if you're a safety professional, you're going into the executive's office, you're trying to push your program forward, you're trying to push for an investment, what would be a better approach from
right.
pushing?
I think that there's a real difference between communicating value in something and creating value in something. So the communication of value, whether it is to a customer or to your staff, the communication of value is where we tell people what they need to do. We tell them what they should do. We tell them why. We tell them all these things. And we're kind of like walking, you know, safety brochures, and we tell everybody what our expectations are. That's the communication of value. The creation of value is something that happens in the other person's mind. And that can't be done by telling. So that's the push and the pull. That can only be done by engaging them in the conversation. So I think we are often selling the wrong thing. That's what the problem is. Like we think we are selling the right thing, but we're not. And it reminds me of a story I read somewhere about the time when Little House on the Prairie existed, like the 1800s in Wisconsin, right? I remember reading this story about, and this speaks to the idea of selling the right thing. Like, what are people buying? And you said it right at the beginning. People make decisions for themselves. They make choices for themselves. They don't make them because we say something. We are often selling completely the wrong thing. And that's what the problem is. So there was this ice company back in the day, and they had like the best horses, and their wagons never broke down, and their drivers could get anywhere through all the Indians and the rivers, and they could make it to where they needed to. They even customized, they did emergency deliveries. They were just amazing. And they had the lion's share of the market, and they were happily out there selling ice. What they didn't realize was that their customers weren't buying ice. They were buying something else. So whenever I pose this question, I mostly get blank looks because it's kind of a tricky question, right? So I'll ask companies, well, what should they have been selling? And then I get all the things. Well, you know, safety, your protection, because it's best for the company. It keeps our costs down. It controls our workman's comp. OSHA will stay away, like all of those different things, right? We think that's what they're buying. But in the case of this ice story, the company was selling ice. What the customer was actually buying was ways to keep food cold. Now, if that company had realized that their customer was buying a ways to keep food cold, they might have come up with something to plug in, right, themselves. But instead, someone else came up with this thing that you plug in and the ice company went out of business because they didn't know what they were actually selling. So, you know, the importance is, you know, why do we want people to do certain things? Like, why is it important to them? Why Why should people buy for you? Why should people listen to you? Well, only the person that you're speaking to knows that. So it comes down to how well we can begin these conversations and what kind of questions can we ask that will elicit the information that we need. So people, staff, customers, they don't argue with their own data. Like staff don't argue with what comes out of their mouth. They like to argue with what comes out of other people's mouths. So the real skill or the real gift is how do we get as leaders and as salespeople, the things that we want to tell people to come out of their mouth versus ours. And that's the push and the pull, right? So I can tell you, or I can start sharing stories and asking questions that take you there on your own. People don't argue with their own data, right? But you have to be smart and you have to ask smart questions. You have to create great stories that people can engage in, especially today, right?
What's really neat about your comments here, Colleen, is that, I know I'm going to listen to this recording again after we're done with it, because there's so much of your comments and your tips that are about asking questions. It's about a natural sense of curiosity about the other person, about understanding them. It's not so much, I have all this info and let me dump it on you.
Right.
I think there are a lot of safety professionals that this is what they run into. I mean, even from my standpoint, I mean, we're dealing with the PPE. So there are features, benefits, stats, figures, all these things, frankly, which our customers could probably Google on their own anyway, but we feel the need to go and just dump it on them as if that's what's going to actually convince them to purchase and use this PPE. The concept of asking questions, understanding where the other person is coming from, I think that is so critical. I mean, that gets the person on your side. And you, as you said, you start to have them draw out that data through their own experiences, their own stories. And then it's almost like, well, they don't want to contradict that. So they're going to go along with it.
That's exactly it. Like people won't argue with their own data. It's actually impossible if you understand how the brain is wired. Like it's impossible. The minute something leaves your mouth, it's there. You own it. It's not going to go away. And that can be good for you or bad for you, depending on what comes out of your mouth. But, you know, I think it's about understanding why people are having certain thoughts, why people are experiencing certain things, why they have doubts. It's more about why than what. But we're not terribly patient people. And so in sales, the minute we hear even some sort of indication that someone might be remotely interested in what we have, we start telling them why. We start telling them why they should work with us. And that's a hard way to sell. Like that's painful and it's hard. I find it easier to understand why someone is inclined or not inclined to do something. Because once we understand that, then I really can connect the dots for people and actually do very little presenting. Presentations, a good salesperson doesn't even really need to be a good presenter. It's not about that. It's how well you can manage the conversation, right? Because people buy for their own reasons. People do or don't do things for their own reasons. So let's figure out what those are. And we'll have a better chance, right? I also think that this just comes with lots of experience everybody has under their belt, is we assume that we know what someone means by certain things. Like we hear certain words, certain phrases, and we assume because we've heard that before, and we probably have many, many times, that we know what they're thinking, but we don't. So like we have to get more curious about why people are doing the things they do to kind of get us back to that point in life when you're so new at something that all you can do is ask questions because you don't know any better. those people are gifted. Like, and then unfortunately, then we beat it out of them, right? And then they just, we can't stop them from talking. But we make so many assumptions. We don't even think about what words mean to people. Like, what is expensive? What is cheap? What is quick? What is slow? What is durable? What is reliable? Like, what do these words mean to other people? But we don't bother to do that either. We just assume that we know, and we start selling
right
our idea.
Yeah, I think going back a little bit to what we were talking about is that like safety professionals, everybody in an organization has to realize that they're competing for budget, essentially, right? They're, regardless of whether you're going to bring in a new safety software or you're going to bring in a new accounting system, everybody's sort of competing for those same dollars. And the last episode we did, we were talking about technology, and Barry, who was our guest, was saying, you know, you shouldn't go in as a safety professional trying to justify the ROI of this investment. We're keeping people safe. We're helping them go home to their families at the end of the day. And to try to calculate an ROI on that is kind of a misdirection almost. And you know, back to the earlier statement of most companies would say out loud, safety is one of our top priorities. Safety is priority number one. Safety is a core value. I think, you know, tying it back to what you're sharing, Colleen, is like, we can go in instead of preaching safety, we can ask, you know, the executive team, as an example, like, what is most important to you? Is making sure all your employees get home to their families at the end of the day most important, or is shaving, you know, 2% off our overall expenses more important? Like, what is it? And get them to get into that kind of frame of mind where they have almost no choice, right, but to go forward with this initiative because it supports their values. And like you said, once that truth comes out of them rather than you preaching to them, they can't kind of turn back.
Right. And, you know, finding out the budget from your boss is, or if there is one, is no different than finding out if a customer is willing to spend money with you. It's the same conversation. So, like, I mean, why aren't we just asking our bosses, how are they going to go about making this decision? Because if I were the safety guy and I wanted part of the budget, what I need to understand is how my boss is going to decide how he's going to allocate his funds. Like, that's the first question I would have of the boss would be, hey, Scott, listen, I know that you've got to control your spending. And we're all lined up at your door asking for money. My question for you is, how do you go about deciding who gets what? Like, the first thing I need to understand is how you think.
Right.
Right. Just like a customer, how they think, how do they go about deciding? Because if someone is unable to give, like, when do you want to know that the money is not there? Like, sooner or later?
Yeah.
My opinion is sooner, but sometimes we don't ask the questions behind the scenes that we need to. So I want to understand that so that I can create a presentation or some sort of proposal to my boss that is based on something that we've talked about, like what's important to him. How did he decide those things were important? Last time he made a decision like that, how did that go for him, right? Would he do things differently than he did last time? Like, I can just think of, you know, I don't know, 5 or 6 questions that I'd be asking my boss if I was lining up for money.
Yeah, and I think too that it is a, like we've talked about the system or the process, and that it isn't, I know for me, I'm speaking from personal experience, is like, I want to have a call. I want to convince somebody of something and then have them make that decision. Right. And I think that, again, following the process, you could start to understand that maybe you need to be planning 12 months out or 18 months out or 24 months out. So asking those questions, those examples that you just gave us, Colleen, is like, you might not get the budget next month. You might not get it next quarter, but now you're asking the right questions. You're being respectful. You're seeking to understand. And I can't help but think sooner or later, you're going to get that initiative approved, because now you're following the process. You're asking questions. You're probably looking for little yeses along the way, and building up to that big yes that you want, in order to maybe move that initiative forward.
You know, I think there isn't a CEO on the planet that isn't going to say the safety of his people is important to him. Like, whether it's true or not, I mean, we all are like that. It's just like the safety of our kids is important to us. Like, no, those kind of questions, those are like those questions that we ask, like a life insurance guy will say to you, hey, Gabe, if something happens to you, want to make sure your family's taken care of?
Well, so yeah, what am I going to say? No.
or if you're investing, so would you like to, retire early with lots of money? Like, those are questions. Those make no sense to me, because we know enough about people to understand those things. But what we don't understand always is how people think through things. If you understand that, you can figure out if there's a place for you in there, and you can sort of broaden the conversation beyond the obvious, right? And I think we need to, I'm not sure that we always understand what we're being asked. And rather than ask a question back, we prefer to answer because we believe that that's what this person wants to hear. It's the curiosity thing that you talked about, Gabe. It's like, where did that all go? Like, how did that get beaten out of us? I mean, I have 5 kids and 7 grandkids, and I'm watching their creativity and their curiosity just get sucked out of them the minute they hit the phone, right? We are not rewarded for being curious. We are not rewarded for asking questions. We are programmed quite the opposite. And so I understand why why we end up where we do in these conversations. I'm just curious. I'm always curious why people think the way they think. I'm curious about whether or not they're even open to talking about a different approach, right? Even if they don't, and it's not the outcome. And I think we get too hung up sometimes on the outcome of things. And we can't control that. Like, I can't control what anybody's going to think of this. I have no control over that. I have no control whether someone decides to work with me or not. But I can control what I do. And that's all I can do. So if that's a fact, and we know it is, then I want to be the best at this, whatever this is. I need to become better than somebody else, right, in order to rise above.
There's so many points in there that I love, and one of them definitely is that curiosity and what you can control and what you can get better at. There was actually a safety manager I was talking with who had been in a new company for probably about a year and a half or so, and was getting very frustrated with how people were just so set their ways. They didn't want to change things. They had injuries already, but nobody really wanted to change anything. And he said, I have this information. I want to be able to change the game and all this stuff and change the culture of the company. I said, okay, well, so you want to have these game changer initiatives that you want to bring on board. Do you even know what the rules of the game currently are? And he said, I never thought about it that way. And it's like, yeah, there are different people that are different players in your company. They do things a certain way. There are the written rules and the unspoken rules. And do you actually understand what those are? Because if you're trying to change them, you can't do that if you don't even know what people are doing, how they play the game, what's important to them. Right. I think it goes right back to that curiosity.
It does, but you really said it well. Like, we need to understand how and why they think the way they do. Like, you're right. You can't change something that you can't define. It's the golf swing. Like, you can't fix it if you don't know what it is. The challenge is, like, for me and for my clients, is this is a work. This this whole idea of becoming excellent at communication and convincing people to do things is not something that's predisposed for certain people. Like, it's not, nobody's preordained to be better at this. What separates the great from this mass is structure, systems, and replicatable practice, right? So for that gentleman who's trying to change the way his company sees safety, he does need to understand how they currently see it, right? Yeah.
Now, going back to the definitions of words, I mean, if you ask someone, you know, how safe, what do you consider safe work?
Yeah. Right?
Even just the word safe is can have many different different interpretations.
Exactly. Like, if this fellow went all through his company and asked the same question to 10 different people, he's going to get 10 different responses.
Right.
And it's good, because then he'll understand. So everybody views what they're doing based on sort of where they are in the picture, where they are in the movie, the role that they play. And the only way that you can have someone shift that is to understand it. Like, there's no question, right? And you can't blame people for not doing things if we don't ask them to do them. Like, we can't blame people for not changing if we don't suggest that change is needed.
Yeah, and again, thinking back to the training, like, it to realize everybody's an individual and everybody buys for their own reason, then you can be curious and ask questions with each person individually. And kind of the blanket stat we hear is it's the young people in construction who typically have the highest injury rate. And it's easy to understand. Yeah, you're 19. You think you're invincible. You haven't seen much, right? You're naive, so you do things that you wouldn't otherwise do. You're my age. You have a family. You have a mortgage. You have all sorts of other things to consider, and you've seen a bunch of people get injured or have near misses, those sorts of things, and that all adds into your perspective. So I think it's interesting to understand, and I think from a sales perspective, and I don't know exactly if it translates perfectly, but I remember you talking about how you don't know if that person was an only child and got everything they ever wanted, regardless of the price, or if the person was the seventh child that was only used to hand-me-downs their whole entire life, and anything brand new and shiny would be exciting.
Exactly. Right? Obviously,
those are very two different kind of perspectives, and unless you take the time, you're not necessarily trying to become best friends, but you're trying that rapport, you're trying to at least understand their perspective, where they're coming from, and what those reasons would be for them to provide the budget or invest or buy.
Well, that's right. And that's why understanding the words that people use are fascinating, right? And the power that we have in the choice of words that we can use to create pictures, to have them pause for a moment to consider something. This comes down to, like, how well can you deliver your message? Like, how can you package it in a way that makes them wonder? It creates a bit of curiosity on their part. But we tend to be kind of so intellectual at times that, you know, I always tell my sales clients that, you know, what I want you to do, I want you to go on calls and find out what you don't know. Like, don't go into a call only to uncover all the things you already know. Like, you're no further ahead than when you walked in. But if your goal is to figure out what you don't know, something different about this person, some way they view the world, and if we can craft really unique questions, we can elicit all kinds of information. Like, asking any of those people that you identified, the young, you know, 19-year-old up, like, how do they, what does safety mean to them? What is important to them? How would they go about making a decision? Like, all of these different questions will give you those answers, but we are so convinced that we know everything.
Right.
that we've lost, but you actually have to consciously remind yourself, like, yeah. I walk into meetings and yeah. I remind myself, be curious, like, I have to remind myself to listen, to ask questions. So it's not like it's total natural, right? It's like your golf swing, right? You think about yeah. what's going to happen before you swing the club. It's like a diver, an Olympic diver, mentally walks through the dive before they leave the platform. It's the same thing. And what I see in sales and in leadership is sometimes people are unwilling to put the preparation in that's required to pull this off. Like, even the choice of words is just so, so important. They did this study, I don't know, like in the 70s when everybody was smoking pot, I think, but I'm a child of the 70s, so I know, right? But anyway, you know, so they had this university test, and they put these four groups of people into four different rooms, and they showed them the same video of a car accident. Like, nobody was hurt, but they showed them the same video. Then they went into each group and they asked a similar question. So to one group, they said, you know, how fast do you think the cars were going when they bumped into each other? The second group, they said, how fast do you think the cars were going when they ran into each other? The third one was like, how fast do you think these cars were going when they crashed into each other? Changing one word changed the speed estimate on the same film, right? One word can change how a whole room responds to something. So as a leader, we want to be very careful to choose our words in such a way that we can create a different thought process to happen. I mean, I do a lot of work with, don't tell anybody, but I do a lot of work with like politicians and speeches and things like that. And I'm always looking at how their word choice is actually going to determine the outcome. And they don't even see it. I'm looking at it going, okay, well, I know what this person is. I know that I can predict how they're going to respond. So we can do this, but it takes effort, and not everybody is willing, right?
Yeah. I think one of the interesting takeaways for me was, and again, kind of thinking about the safety professionals within an organization, they're experts, they're there for a reason. They're there to provide their expertise. And often, like we were saying, we get caught up in our own smarts. But one of the takeaways was when you're talking, time is moving so slowly for the other person. But when they're talking, time evaporates, it disappears, right? So the more I think of it all the time. It's like, okay, I think I'm going on a little much. It must be other people are getting bored. I better wrap this up, right? Versus if I get the other person talking, I know I have as much time as I need, or even more time than we've allocated, because the passage of time doesn't exist when you're talking. And the other, like, again, that some of the tactics, we're talking systems, but tactics was, it was one of my favorite ones, is you get people talking about pain, let's say, within the organization, or a problem that you need to solve. And I use this a lot, because I would get talking and be passionate, but I'd say, hey, look, I love what I do. I'm really super excited about it. I could talk about this for days, but if at any point during our conversation, you're going to make that decision to buy, just put your hand up and I'll stop talking.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's you know, you can have a little bit of humor, but also, again, now I'm giving the person permission to, like, okay, you've said enough, I don't need to hear anymore, we're ready to move to that next stage. And it worked really effectively, again, because it's real, you're humans, and you're acknowledging that you might be going on a little bit longer than you should, and you're giving the other person permission to kind of wrap
up. You know, the person who's asking the questions is the one who's in control of everything, the right. sales call, the meeting, the conversation. The person who's talking isn't, which is good from a sales perspective, right? So our job as leaders, as salespeople, as managers, is to ask the questions that allow people to process the information you want them to process. And they can and they will. So we take all of the things that we want to tell people and figure out what question could I ask that would cause this to appear in someone's brain. That's what we need to do. And yeah. So sales is all about questions and getting, because people don't argue with their own data, and having them actually think about things. So because we're salespeople are very similar, and because leadership is often very similar, it's almost like our staff and our customers, they know what we're going to say next. They know what we're going to do next. They know all of this. So they kind of shut down. They sit in meetings and they're really not even listening. Like nobody's really paying attention. But what if we switched it up? And rather than telling people a bunch of stuff, we started with some really interesting questions to get their minds going, to open them up to something. That's what we need to do, to allow them to consider what we're saying in their own head, right? Not translating what we're telling them, but figuring it out for themselves. And so people will buy, and you're right about time. Oh my goodness. Like from a sales perspective, if a customer's talking, nothing matters. But if all I'm doing is telling them why, it matters. And they're bored and they're making grocery lists in their head.
Yeah. You can't talk your way out of a traffic ticket, but you can talk your way out of a sale.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 5 minutes getting it, 55 buying it back. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What I like about that so much too is it goes back to the very first thing that you said in our conversation, which was to understand whether the other person, the other party, is even willing to change. And if all you're doing is just throwing out information, throwing out stats and figures and everything that you know, the one thing that you won't know is whether the person is actually willing to change or not.
Or maybe they've got a brilliant idea. When I think of staff and I think about some of the meetings that I've sat in on with clients, and I think, wow, I bet you there's a piece of brilliance sitting in this boardroom and you're never going to get to it.
Oh, interesting.
Right? You're never going to get to it because you're not allowing that to happen. You're not allowing the engagement. And I think there's a couple things. That one is ego, without question, gets in our way a lot. The need to be right gets in our way all the time. And the need to be understood versus understanding. That's a Covey statement. What, seek first, right, understand, then be understood. And yep. By the way, it's not Covey, it's biblical. It belongs to God, but he didn't get the quote on it, Covey. Right? So really, and that's what we need to do in all work, in all leadership, in sales, in business transactions, is understand. At your own peril, though, like if it means we won't do business, so be it. But I would rather have that decision made than to force someone to do something that's probably just going to unravel anyway.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that I've been focusing anyways on, you know, safety professional going to their organization and trying to get maybe budget and trying to get investment or resources for an initiative or a technology. But that just reminded me about the career development side of things as well. Often, I was just having a call earlier today. If you're in engineering or operations or sales or finance, there's a path to the C-suite for you. But often in safety, it just sort of fizzles out somewhere in the middle of the organization. And I think you can use the same process or system for your career advancement and be asking those questions, you know, at an appropriate time. Is there a future for me? Is there something beyond the manager of safety? Is there a director level position? It's much easier for an organization to give you a promotion than it is to go and find and replace you, right? So we shouldn't be afraid of asking these questions. And if I think we ask them in a respectful, curious manner, you'll actually probably get favor, you know, within the organization and recognize that somebody who does want, you know, to to advance their career and take on more responsibility and grow with the organization.
You know, and the worst case scenario with that is that you find out the truth.
Right. Sooner
than later. And so to me, like, when do you want to know the truth? Do you want to know it today or do you want to know it in 10 years? So, and I, you know, people do change companies. They do move around. But what is, to your point, sometimes people leave because they believe there isn't anything there, but they haven't actually asked. Like, you're not going to get what you don't ask for. I tell my clients in sales all the time, just ask for the business. What's the worst thing that could happen to you? They say no. Right. Well, when do you want to know that? Do you want to know it now or do you want to know it in 12 months as this person sits in your sales funnel for eternity, right?
Right.
Like, it's all about the truth. How quickly can we get to the truth? And it's okay that their truth is not mine. Like, that's not the point. But you're right. When people are developing their career, they don't position themselves properly. I mean, anytime I've coached anybody in that regard, like, how are we going to get you to the next point? It's a sales call that we plan.
Yeah.
I don't plan a conversation. We plan a sales call. The transaction is me getting to be the vice president. Okay, so let's think about how we're going to do this. What questions can you ask? What stories can you share? What are you going to say at the beginning? What are you going to say at the end? And build a strategy. And don't assume that your boss has been thinking about this.
Right.
Or thinking about you all year, because just like a customer, they're not, because they got stuff to do, right?
Yeah.
But if you want to separate yourself from the pack, then yeah, you have to do something different.
And that sounds like how I asked my wife to start dating. Well, we've been married almost 20 years, so I guess I did an all right job.
Yeah, so far so good, right?
So far so good.
Well, that was the conversation with Colleen when I said, you know, how do I move up within my organization? And she said, look, Scott, you're probably going to have to start your own company if you want to be the CEO, because nobody's ever going to hire you to be the CEO. But you want to know that sooner than later.
Yeah,
but I think, you know, in all seriousness too, like, you probably don't. Getting back to the system, right, and the longer term view, you probably don't want to just go in and ask for a promotion, right, or ask for a raise. You probably want to go in, like you were saying, with curiosity and being open-minded and saying, hey, look, like, I like it here. I enjoy the people that I work with. I'd really like to stick around, but I want to know what my future opportunities look like. Where do you see me in 5 years, or what other areas could I move into to grow?
It's a lot about, like, you can't expect people to just do things without them knowing you want them to do them. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, like, you're right. Like, if you're looking for a raise, then you got to figure out, like, why would anybody give it to you? Right? Like, just because you've been there, like, maybe longer than anybody, that's not going to fly anymore. Right. And so, like, yeah. There's a strategy to all this, and communication, the people who win at communication, it's not about what you say. It's about what the other person hears. And those are very, very different things. They're very different. So what you tell somebody, like, you know, I, we, me, all this stuff about me, that they're not going to hear that. So I have to figure out, how do I get you to hear something that you haven't heard before? And so it sounds complex, but communication is really simple in many ways. If we establish a framework for the conversation, we're clear on the outcomes that we want. We know what stories we're going to share. We know what questions we're going to ask. If we're prepared, we're going to win. It's in sales, in life, in meetings, everywhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that was the other big takeaway for me, was the prep work, right? Like, I'm a wing it kind of guy. And, you know, so I'm like, okay, I got to do sales now. I'm just going to go knock on people's doors and start talking to them, right? But you need to put in a lot of prep, and you need to think through it. And one of the invaluable things, and Colleen, we have to have you back. I know we're running up on the hour here, and I'd love to get feedback from our audience too about maybe doing some workshops or something, just teasing that out. Words escaping me, but like the mock calls that we would do, the practice, right? The rehearsals. Like if you have a good salesperson, they probably just didn't show up with all the right questions, right? And being able to deal with all the situations, they've either trial and error or they've done those kind of mock questioning, you know, with peers and practiced and prepared, right? Like using your golf analogy, and I can't remember who it was, but showing up for the PGA Tour and somebody's walking off to the putting green and saying, hey, are you going to come and warm up? And they said, well, if you didn't bring it with you, you're not going to find it here, right?
I'm pretty grateful that doctors prep before they open people up. That airline pilots have a pre-flight check before they take off. But for some reason in this world of sales and in business, we don't, especially sales, like when I look at my clients in sales, I don't see anything different than a room full of doctors or lawyers. Like they have something to bring that's of great value, of equal value, but somehow we don't see it that way. And it's a shame because it is a profession.
So, and I love that concept of practicing and that there is a skill to it. I think one of the, and Scott, I'll go back to the start of our conversation. First of all, it is a miracle that you and I are friends because I'm not a fly by the seat of my pants sort of person. And I'm very process oriented in how I do things. And I think maybe that's one of the things where I looked at sales as, it looked chaotic to me. And I probably was just not talking to the right salespeople. But then as I started to get to know people that were in sales that actually did a good job with it, and I started to see the practice and the skill and the structure behind it, I think I started to appreciate it so much more and realize, oh, it's not fly by the seat of your pants sort of thing. There is an actual way to do this. You can grow in this skill. It's not one of those things where some people are just born with it and others aren't. You can actually develop it. And so I think even for safety professionals, whether they are a long established safety manager or someone just getting into the profession, to know that there's a way to build that structure, to get your point across, to change the culture, to get the ear of executive management and have them work with you. I think that's fascinating. And I think it's encouraging for people that are getting into this profession to know that they can continue to get better and that there's a way to actually follow a process to get better.
Oh, yeah, there is. It is highly predictable. It is not chaotic. It feels chaotic if you're just out swinging your club, thinking if I hit the ball harder, it's going to go further. That becomes chaotic.
Right.
But it's not chaotic. It can be predictable.
That's super cool. I like that.
And I think most safety folks are outgoing typically, but you don't need to be a good salesperson. I think almost, you know, the personality profiling and all the exercises we did, it almost works in your favor if you're not, because it's easier to kind of sit outside yourself, observe the conversation and ask the right questions. And you don't have those tendencies to talk and answer and be the expert, as some outgoing people might do too often, right? So I think that, you know, if you're sitting there listening and you're saying, well, sure, that's fine if you're charismatic or you're outgoing or you love people, but that's really not the truth of it.
No, some of the best salespeople I have ever met were the quietest, most unassuming. They're like stealth missiles. You don't even see them coming. And then there's the boisterous, smooth talking ones that rely on a presentation to sell that really can't even keep up to these people. Right? So
interesting. Well, definitely. We will have to get you back here. And as I said earlier, this is one that I'm definitely going to listen to multiple times because there are so many phenomenal just nuggets of wisdom that are just all over the place in here. So Colleen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for just helping us understand a little bit more about sales and how it applies to, gosh, so many areas of life.
Yeah. Well, it's been my pleasure. I mean, anytime I get the chance to do this, it's a great opportunity. So thank you, Scott. Thank you, Gabe. And I look forward to seeing you both again.
Yeah, I'll just quickly before we wrap up, just ask if people want to track you down or ask you questions, what's the best way to reach you?
Well, I have a couple of sites. One is ColleenMadsen.com. And the other one is a new firm I've started, which is a story for another day, called theexperiencegroup.ca. So, or just check me out on LinkedIn. You'll find me there as well. We're happy to hook up with anybody. If anybody has questions, I'm more than happy to see if I can help.
Yeah, great. And well, awesome. We'll put links in the description and we'll make sure people can track you down. And
thank you.
And I'm pretty sure that we'll have you back again for either another episode or maybe like a group discussion workshop format too. So,
oh, that'd be wonderful. Get a group of your people online. That would be a lot of fun. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you again, gentlemen.
Very yeah, cool. Thank you so much, Colleen.
All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.